Lambo and the team. I don't know why Gaji gets preferential treatment in this committee. They tell me that they are giving you 50 minutes for presentation and 1 hour for engagement. And I know that you don't need that much time because your presentations are straightforward and there are no queries. But I'll keep the time as such, and it's all up to you. But I must say that it's always a pleasure to have you here. All that we don't have is the right to give you the freedom of the city of Cape Town. I don't know if you have any new members of staff, or we want to introduce the delegation quickly.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to you and to honourable members of the committee. I echo the same sentiment. We always look forward to coming here because we get good guidance about what we should do going forward. Chair, the people with me is Mr. Patrick Handermark, the Chief Legal Executive. On my left is Ms. Vidi Vedlankar, the CEO, and Ms. Rebecca Chabatau, the CFO. Behind me is I don't think Noni has come, but maybe she has come. But she's been here. Oh, yeah. That's Ms. Noni Mgadza. She's the chairperson of our audit committee, one of the board committees. Next to her is Ms. Mashela Naidu. She's a board member. Also sits in the REMCO, Remuneration Committee of the Board. And next to her is Ms. Fozia Barkos. It's her first time here. She's Justice Centre Executive of our Worcester Justice Centre. And then Mr. Jeremy Kokwane, who is the COO of Legal Aid South Africa. And next to her is Ms. Cordelia Robertson, the Regional Operations Executive of the Western Cape and the Northern Cape. I think that's the team, Chair. Thank you, Chair. No problem, Chair. Thank you very much. And thanks for the opportunity to come and brief the portfolio committee. I have decided that the CEO should do the briefing on the APP. And the Chief Financial Officer will do the briefing on the budget, just to make sure that we keep the presentation to a minimum. But from myself, Chair, I want to say we continue to do what the Constitution expects us to do for the vulnerable people of South Africa, and I think the report we're talking to today tells that story. We do have challenges that are there, like everyone else, especially the budget cuts, but we are managing with those budget cuts, and I want to assure the committee that service delivery will not and has not been compromised by those budget cuts, because we knew in advance that they were going to happen and we planned for them. The only downside of it is that expansion is a problem because we don't have new money. So, but in terms of service delivery, our normal operations, we have not been adversely affected. We continue to operate in an environment where we think a lot more can be done. I addressed this committee last time about the awaiting trial prisoner population and what sort of checking can be done to make sure that those cases are prioritized and checked and handled quicker. As Legal Aid South Africa, we are one of the stakeholders, and we continue to nudge and flush out those reports and bring them to the attention of the judicial officers to make sure that they prioritize those cases. But it's slow process. I want to admit that up front. It's slow progress because the bulk of those cases that sit a lot in our rolls are in the regional courts. And the regional courts operate on a system where judicial officers control their own rolls. And it's very slow in that regard. But from the High Court point of view, Chair, I want to assure you that the backlog level, if any, is very minimal in the High Court, because we prioritize those cases and we finalize them. But other than that, without saying much, can I, with your permission, hand over to the CEO to take the committee through our report. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. I was just trying to find my electronic copy because some of the figures were looking a bit blurred there to me. So I was doing it. As our Chairperson has said, that we're briefing you today on the ACP and the budget as requested, and that in relation to that and the new year that we are going into starting this month, April, which is 2016-17, that if we, and I think like with everyone else in government departments and agencies within a context of budget constraints, you will recall that in the last year we had a budget cut of 62 million and in this year we have of 93 million, and that those budget cuts, however, don't affect our service delivery because those relate to our cash flow management, that we will be able to access that money from our cash reserves. And so that doesn't affect our service delivery, but just it's what Treasury wanted us to do, to use money from there rather than giving us additional. However, in this new financial year, what the main issue for us is what the Chairperson alluded to, is that we don't have real cuts in terms of money being reduced. However, as with everyone else, the cost of living increases that were given to the staff linking to the wage settlement is higher than what is given in the macro increases from Treasury, as well as the fact that certain contractual obligations are higher than what is given by Treasury, which means we have a shortfall. And that shortfall, what Treasury has said, is like with everyone else, is that you freeze posts as they become available. So we're not reducing posts, but it means that some posts, when we reach a recruitment level, that is what we've budgeted for, we won't be able to fill any more posts. So in this case specifically, 97% it was what we had our recruitment level at for 2014-16, the year we've just closed, and for the new year we've dropped it to 96%, as well as the fact that for the Judy Care, our Judy Care budget, which is the money we use to pay private lawyers to do some of the work, which is only about 3-4% of our work, we've reduced that by 7% for the same reason. So those are the main things that we see impacting. For us, it means we can't extend it, as the Chairperson said. However, what we will try and do is to maintain the service delivery despite that changes in recruitment levels. But we're not sure that we will be able to do that. We will track it, and when we brief you in August on our last year's performance, the previous year's performance, we will give you an update on that. So talking to the annual performance plan, I thought we should just start with where we are at in terms of some of our indicators, and on slide, I think it should be 4 or 5, it's the performance information as at Q3, which is at the end of December. So this is just an overview. It is there. I'm not going to go into it in too much detail, but to say that we're reasonably satisfied that we are on track, but that we want to also point out that linking to the number of matters coming to court, that has stabilized in criminal matters, and so we don't see that will increase, and that we are still present in all the courts that we have to give legal aid at, but that number is likely to be stable from last year. And in civil legal aid also, we don't anticipate an increase. We haven't had increased capacity, so we don't anticipate an increase. In terms of impact matters and other matters is also indicated. And overall, in terms of our budget, we were spent at about 67% as at Q3, and we should have been spent at about 75%, but some of the funding linked into capital expenditure, etc., does get done over the period, and therefore we are also satisfied by the end of the financial year we would have spent the bulk of our budget, which is greater than 98% of our budget is what our target is. So the next few slides talk to a three-year performance prior to that, and I'm not going to go through that because that was just more for your information, and I'll move straight to the annual performance plan, which is slide 11. And the introductory comments in terms of the ACP I've already dealt with, and that one other thing is that in terms of our strategic plan 2015 to 2020, the five-year plan, this then becomes, the APP for the new year becomes the second year of that strategic plan period, and that we have completed the first year at the end of March, and we will report on that to you later in the year, and the issue of the budget, etc., I've mentioned. So I'll move to the strategies, the programs, and the targets, and I want to refer you to slide 13 and 14, and in those two slides, you'll see that we deal with programs 1 and 2, where we are dealing with the delivery of criminal legal aid and the delivery of civil legal aid. In both of those cases, you'll see that our targets are set out as well as the budget, and that in those, as I indicated, we will continue to deliver services at the level we have, and in terms of the practitioner for court ratio in criminal courts, we are in district courts aiming for a coverage in 2016-17 of 83%, in regional courts of 93%, and in high court we will cover all matters that require legal aid. And in civil legal matters, our target is that we will ensure that based on the capacity of our practitioners, that we will take in civil legal matters up to that extent, and then if we don't have sufficient capacity, we will give priority to the constitutional rights-based matters, so those where the rights of clients are particularly affected. Moving to the next two slides, 15 and 16, and I'm also going to not go through everything on it because you have it, but also you have the detailed annual performance plan and the budget. So if you have any questions, I think we can answer, and given the time that's been allocated to us, we will be just going through it in summary. In terms of Program 3 and Program 4, we're dealing with advice matters and impact matters. Advice matters is the advice we give through our paralegal program, where we have paralegals at every justice center and satellite offices, as well as our legal aid advice line, which is our call center. And also we have a program whereby we have paralegals that provide assistance at those prisons that have the largest number of awaiting trial prisoners. And there we have legal aid clinics, so that if they haven't been able to access our assistance, then that is where they are given assistance, and so those programs are still on track. And the same with impact litigation, which, as you know, is strategic litigation linking to matters where we can clarify aspects of the law, or we're dealing with larger groups of people who have similar matters that have to be dealt with. And in the case of 2016-17, we will continue to do those matters, and the budget for that, including the internal staff, will be $10 million. We also work with other NGOs and organizations who are themselves doing the impact litigation, where we would work with them and fund that litigation. So that's the next two programs. In programs 5, I think that's specifically focused on working with the justice system and the justice cluster to see how we can also contribute from our side to make sure that we don't contribute to delays in the justice system and to the efficient functioning of the justice system. We have to ensure that we do that, but we also look at how we can contribute to others working better, and so overall for the justice system to work better and finalize. So that's what Program 5 is aimed at. And Program 6 is linking to accountability, which I think is fairly straightforward, where we have to account to executive authority and to the parliament. And moving on to Program 7 and 8, we're talking to finances and financial sustainability. And in this instance, it would be about making sure that our budgets and our plans are approved timelessly, which they have been for the new year already. The budget has been submitted to the minister as well as to the National Treasury. And that in terms of the MTEF that was done last year, and the allocation letter from Treasury was received. So based on that, we will then report and that we've closed our books for the last financial year, and we will be reporting on that in the new financial year. If we move to slide, looking at programs 9, 10, and 11, slide 20, you will see that those three programs talk to the governance, and the governance issues relate to us ensuring that we comply with all our statutory requirements, that we have an effective and functional board, and that we also have a audit coverage plan, which is linking to an internal audit department and therefore ensuring the governance oversight separately from management itself. So all of those programs are also in place, and there the targets would be, as one would expect, that we want 100% compliance in terms of statutory requirements. We want to ensure that more than 95% of our audit coverage plan is delivered, and we want to ensure that our board is functioning effectively. And just to pause on the board, you will know that as a committee, you were party to us finalizing our Legal Aid South Africa Act, and it was approved at the end of 2014. It came into effect on the 1st of March, which is when we had a transitional board for 1 year, which ended in February. And that board was essentially comprised of the old board as well as the executive members that were now included on the board. That board worked effectively, and they fulfilled all the requirements of the transitional period. And so on the 1st of March, we now have a new board. And the new board has been appointed by the minister. The entire document also went to cabinet and was ratified by the cabinet. So we have a new board with the chairman, still Judge President Lambo, and we have a smaller board with 10 board members and 4 executive board members. So we are pleased that worked effectively, the transition. Now in the new period, we are focusing on the new board and stabilizing the new board and ensuring that they continue to do the same. And the next program, Program 12, is also linked to that, because that program then talks to the rest of the requirements of the Legal Aid SA Act, and specifically in this period now, the new board will have to look at the issue of the legal aid regulations and the legal aid manual. And the legal aid regulations is the policy of legal aid, and the manual is the procedures of legal aid. And the legal aid manual is drawn directly from what we currently have, the legal aid guide, which sets out the policy. But regulations will obviously have a greater status in being regulations. They have been drafted by the department's drafting unit. They have been considered by the new board in March, and they are gone back to the department. And as you will recall, they will also come to this committee because it needs to come to Parliament. So you will see those regulations, which is legal aid policy, later this year. Essentially, that has to be approved before the end of February of next year. So that's why it's on this program. And then the manual, the procedures will also follow with that. So that deals with Program 12. In terms of Program 13, it's the financial management side of the financial sustainability, and that is to ensure that we have sound and prudent financial management and a strong supply chain management. Now, you will be aware that there are many new measures introduced by by National Treasury, linking specifically to cost-cutting measures, the establishment of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, as well as having a single national database for all suppliers of services to government and entities. So we are very much part of the process, and in this year, the focus is going to be to ensure that that whole process works. The switchover was supposed to happen on the 1st of April, and I think that at this stage we have ensured that many of our suppliers have registered on the new database. But beyond that, I think that, as you know, from a financial management point of view, we have paid attention to it in the past. So for us, it's ensuring that we maintain that and we don't let that distract us from our core business, which is delivering legal aid services. So that would be dealing with procurement. In terms of Program 14 and Program 15, is dealing with our HR-related issues, and specifically is talking to ensuring that we maintain our recruitment levels so that we spend our budget, but also so that we have the capacity through our staff to deliver the services that we are required to deliver. And as I said, the main thing here is that From the last financial year to this financial year, we are reducing the recruitment level from 97% to 96%. And that in terms of the staff, we will continue with all our programs, including skills development, which talks specifically to the quality of our staff so that we can ensure that quality legal aid services are delivered. And I think the last program is the program 16, which is our IT program. And in that, it's in legal aid, we are very IT dependent. You will also see that in terms of the data we are able to present to committee and to other forums. And that in the last year, we did report to you that we were in the process of establishing a new legal aid administration IT system, because the one we had had for about 10 years was now outdated. We then had a problem with our service provider, which we also reported, and we had to terminate that contract, and luckily we were able to ensure that we did not waste any money, that we still had and kept the money. And we just now, the board has approved that we will appoint, has approved a service provider to commence with the setting up of a new legal aid administration system from the 1st of May. So we are pleased that that will then ensure that we are up to date in terms of technology and that we don't fall behind. So overall, those are our programs. They are fairly straightforward because the nature of our work is such, and that if there are any questions, then I'm happy to respond to those. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable members, let's take this opportunity to congratulate Judge Mulambo for his retention as the chairperson of the board. Which means that we are not going to be taking one step forward and two backwards. So, and also, Judge, if you can convey our congratulations to your team. Say that we are looking forward to working with them and hope that they will assist you to keep up the good work that has been going on. Thank you very much. Madam, proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. In preparing the 2016-2017 budget, we took into account the budget cuts as indicated by National Treasury, being 93 million for 2016-2017. We also reprioritized our budget, taking into account the spending pressures within the budget allocation. To manage this 92.7 budget cut, we also managing cash flow effectively, ensuring that these cuts are funded from our cash reserves that we accumulated over the year. Because the cuts would be funded from existing cash flow reserves, this will ensure that service delivery is not impacted negatively, as was the case in 2015-16. For the financial year under review 2016-17, you will note that before the funding from legal aid of the cash reserve, the allocation was 1.5 billion. After taking into account the 92 million, it will take us to 1.6 billion. So that will ensure there's continuity of service delivery and that there isn't any reduction in services. The allocation will then increase again in 2017-18, because these budget cuts of 2015-16 and 2017-18, they are once-off and they are not recurring. So going back to 2017-18, it will have an average annual increase of about 6%. The summarized budget for 2016-17, you will see in 2015-16 overall we had a budget of 1.7 billion, 1733, compared to 1722 in 2016-17. The reason for that is that 2015-16 includes the rollover funding of about 98 million. Salaries and related costs take about 70% of our budget, being a high intensive human capital organization. Okay, in analyzing the budget for 2016-17, you will note that salaries and related costs increased by 6.6%. This is due to the cost of living and the PPI, performance progression increase. Okay, we also have to reduce our recruitment level from 97% to 96% to be able to be within the budget, noting Treasury's regulation on this, that whatever additional costs that are above COLI need to be funded from the existing baseline allocation. So this required us to reduce our recruitment level budget. Okay, other direct expenditure decreased by 28%. This was due to the rollover funding relating to impact litigation, mainly for Marikana, which was included in the 2015-2016 but not included in the 2016-17. And we also had to reduce the Judicare budget, as mentioned earlier on, by about 7% to be able to be within the budget at the same time, or also freezing non-critical positions. Okay, the overall operating expenditure increased by 2% due to budget constraints. We only increased those expenses that are linked to contractual obligations. So there was actual negative growth on this line item, because in other items that are within our control, we had to reduce those items to remain within the baseline allocation. Okay, capital expenditure reduced by 381% due to the rollover funding, which is once-off, which includes the ELA, Electronic Legal Aid Administration funding project, which was then included in the 2015-16, but had to be subsequently put on hold due to non-performance by the supplier, as mentioned earlier on. It also includes funding, once-off funding for the acquisition of land and buildings that was approved by National Treasury. Okay, we prepared our budget based on the balance scorecard. You'll note that 72.3% relates to client, committee, stakeholder, and shareholder. This component of the balance scorecard deals mainly with our core service delivery, hence a large percentage of our budget goes there. The other components are there to then support the key service delivery, with the next highest one being employee and organizational capacity. This consists mainly of our support staff, staff other than legal, that are there to support the core service delivery. Okay, when preparing this budget, we considered various information, including the strategic plan of 2015-2020, the year-on-year increase by National Treasury. We also looked at the future sustainability of the organization and the proportion of direct service delivery to administration costs. The capital asset replacement program was also taken into account to ensure that we continue to maintain and replace our assets as and when they reach their lifespan. And again, the National Treasury regulation instruction note on cost containment, budget cuts as well were considered, together with the latest allocation letter of January 2016. The challenges that we faced in the 2016-17 financial year is that although there were no additional budget cuts other than those mentioned earlier of 62 and 93 respectively, we faced challenges in that the COLI, the cost of living increase, that is higher than the micro increase, it impacts negatively on our budget in that we have to fund that from our existing baseline allocation, and this impacts negatively, and it's on our budget, and it's resulting in negative growth. Okay, we then had a shortfall of 3.4%, which is made up of 1.5% for PPI and 1.9% for the cost of living increase, making up the 3.4%. This was funded by reducing the recruitment level budget from 97% to 96%. By also freezing non-critical positions where possible. We then had to also reduce Judicare and the impact budget by 7% if you take last year's budget 2016 compared to this year. and we also extended the useful life of our motor vehicles and computer hardware, in that we are replacing them after a longer period. Furniture is replaced as and when it's necessary. It's not included in our tax budget. Okay, when looking at the expenditure trends over the MTF period, we took into account the budget cuts as mentioned earlier on. These were considered by incorporating them or funding them from our cash and tax reserve, again meaning that service delivery was not impacted negatively. Okay, 70% or more than 70%, it has been allocated to that first balance component of client and community, which is directly linked to the service delivery. And budget constraints, they continue to affect our operations, in that we, for operations, we're only able to fund the increases that are linked to our, that are linked to contractual obligations. In this budget, we have not made a provision for relief staff capacity of legal professionals in cases where, for whatever reason, the legal practitioner is not available in court. And again, the cost of living increases had to be funded from our existing budget allocation. Okay, areas where we're having funding pressures, they include those related to office accommodation, and that the escalations are higher than those of the macro, and also escalations linked to contracts for security and cleaning, because these are also regulated by other bodies and are often higher than the macro increase. And also substantial increases related to municipal services and vehicle fuel. Okay, we have consistently been allocating about 2% of our budget for capital expenditure. And to address those spending pressures, we have extended the lifespan of those assets, again take into account those current budget constraints. Okay, then we have received that additional allocation on the baseline that for legal capacity relating to the court expansion program, and this has been funded over the MTF period. Okay, briefly on the staff trend. For the period, current and over the MTF period, due to financial constraints, we have budgeted for our staff recruitment at 96%, because we cannot afford to fund it higher than that. And our staff establishment is, as indicated, is over 2,800. And as of 31st March, our recruitment level was 95.1%. Okay, the filled positions as at end of the year was 2,717 positions. 79% of these filled posts are those of legal practitioners and the balancing practitioners. Okay, and then 33 case backlog permanent positions were created, 15 for court expansion and 11 for civil practitioners. So we're expecting to increase our staff establishment from 2.7 to 2.88 over the MTF period. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. That's a very brief presentation on the ATP and the budget. One issue that I just think I need to bring to the attention of the committee, Chair, is we are supporting the Limpopo division, the newly proclaimed Limpopo division. We're making sure that it does not fail to process cases because of us. So we are covering its operations where we are required. But the constraints that we're going through now may impact us. I'm not saying they will, because with Mpumalanga being the last frontier, the High Court there will be finished in the next 6-7 months. But we've already started identifying the required needs from a legal representation point of view And we want to assure this committee that we will also do our best, despite the financial constraints, to also cover the operations of that division. Thank you, sir.
I don't know if you have a recruitment agency, because we would utilize it to recruit young people who know in advance that they should do belt tightening. We are the first committee that comes to us and we cut here, we shifted there, so, and that relieves the tension that we have. But, everybody comes here, they want more money regardless of the economic situation. But we have already done your in-house work, so I think you identified the right conversion.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have three questions. The first relates to the usage of the cash reserves to maintain a positive cash flow. My understanding after previous briefings was that these cash reserves, as a matter of fact, were built up as part of good corporate governance and also the requirements of the AG. So the question is, if they are now incrementally being spent, what will be the impact on the good audit findings Legal Aid South Africa have always enjoyed, if any? Then in terms of the ELA and the reference to the electronic system and a huge amount of money which was budgeted for, and now it's been halted because of non-performance on the side of the supplier. I think the question now is how much has been paid already to the supplier? Is the contract cancelled? Was there losses and damages to Legal Aid South Africa? And going forward, what is now the situation with ELA? Then, Chair, also linked to that, we've had the briefing by the department regarding the integrated criminal justice system, and they indicated that Legal Aid South Africa is playing an important role there. So I hope that ELA was not supposed to be part of the integrated criminal justice system, but because that has enough problems of its own. So if we can just have comment also as to how Legal Aid South Africa is involved with this, hopefully finalization of the integrated system. And then lastly, Chair, the Legal Aid South Africa continues to identify a number of priority groups, amongst which is mentioned the landless, especially in eviction cases. But now it would seem as if the Department of Land Affairs and the Land Claims Court have gone on, especially with the pushing back of the dates for claims. And they are making use from a budget they have available of, it would seem, private legal representatives to assist claimants. Which is worrying for two reasons, because I think on the Legal Aid South Africa should be perfectly situated to assist with that. As though the institution assisting the vulnerable. But there's two additional problems. The one is that apparently there's no capping of fees of these attorneys and advocates. And secondly, it would seem as if the success rate in the land claims court on behalf of claimants is as low as 8%. Whilst I think Legal Aid South Africa quite possibly could have and would have done better. So the question is really whether Legal Aid South Africa was in any way involved in the, in this decision to rather set up this fund within the Department of Land Affairs. If not, then possibly the committee must think of engaging with this matter in another way. But if so, then why it was ultimately decided not to, to give the budget to Legal Aid South Africa to assist these people. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Is it the real parliamentary that you steal from my notes? Real.
But I think the problem is false asleep sometimes and honorable.
No, thanks, Chair. I think it...
No.
The honorable Mulane suspected that he wants to cross the floor. No, thanks, Chair. I think to echo your sentiments, I think each time we meet Legal Aid, we feel like something gets out of the space. Because the reporting, the planning is just above board. You can see where the challenge is, the remedial action. So, one matter is, I think it's about this one of land that I want to anchor. When I used to work for Legal Aid many, many years ago. There was a section inside the Legal Aid that was really dealing with the land, assisting the claimants of land. So I think I will want to comment the extent to which that thing is still continuing, because we may have to frustrate this matter of land, as we have said here. And the second one will be the issue of languages. We have raised the issue of the, I think Legal Aid has a very important role to play as we want to fast track the issue of ensuring that litigation must not only be in English or Afrikaans, but we must be able to litigate in Cinderella. If we come from the area where I come from, those who are in Nelspruit must be able to litigate in Siswati. But it is also linked to the whole issue of integrated justice system. I think I would want to know the role exactly around the integrated justice system. And lastly will be the mismanagement of case flow management. I think one of the problems that is still existing in the centers is this case flow management, finding that the magistrate has put this thing on the roll, the candidate or the attorney has another date, the file is lost, and the prosecutor has this other information, and that creates some problems in terms of speedily dealing with the cases in court. I think I want to know what is the plan to deal with that particular matter, because I think it still has some gray areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks Judge President and the team for the presentation. Mine was also on the integrated justice system. The presentation from the Department of Justice indicated that Legal Aid is now linked to more than 800 police stations throughout the country. So I just wanted to check if that does not have a bearing on the workload on Legal Aid South Africa. and whether it doesn't also have a bearing on resources. The other question, Chair, through you, I would like to check if the issue of marijuana is no longer before the courts, before I ask that question. Okay, thanks very much. So I wanted to check what lessons have we learned from the marijuana experience, and also when we are budgeting, are we anticipating a situation where an occurrence of a similar nature might crop up? Then how will we be able to engage that situation? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me follow Honorable Bongo to show my appreciation to Legal Aid South Africa. Through you, Chair, let me start by thanking the Chairperson, who happens to be just President, and your team for a job well done. I would like also to concur with you, Chairperson of the Board, that on the 22nd of March, I was at Limpopo Division of High Court. It's true what you are saying. I saw it with my own eyes. I went to the criminal court section and Legal Aid was visible there. Keep it up. And again, Chairperson, on the issue of marketing and visibility of Legal Aid South Africa. In my own area, Hamtab, rural areas, there is a very big board of Legal Aid South Africa. Since we, in this committee, we said they should be visible in rural areas, that has been implemented within a very short space of time, 5 to 6 months. Yes, very much responsible. Responsive, yes. Thank you. And then I would like to ask something on judicial system. The reduction, Chairperson, through you, Chairperson, by 3% is commendable. But I would like to know mostly, if you can just unpack it in terms of a number of women legal practitioners who are being empowered through the system. And your role, I saw somewhere in the document, your role in the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee and the Provincial Efficiency Enhancement Committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues with the accolades to Legal Aid South Africa. We always say when you come before us, it's like fresh air. You don't have to be challenging much. And we must actually encourage you and continue to appreciate what you're doing. And indeed, it has been indicated that, you know, we still had, regardless of the situation that we've got with the economy of the country, we had requests for budgets that are supposed to be increased. Regardless the request from Treasury that you have to cut, we have some entities that still request that we increase, and it becomes difficult to have to indicate why we can't. So we do appreciate the measures that you've actually put in place to make the point that this does not become a headache. It's not going to be a permanent situation. I'm sure there will come time where things go back to normal, and then we can be in the position to get more funding. For that, we appreciate you. I'm looking at the budget, but maybe it's there, and I don't see it. I saw something about children's rights and things that are easy checking. Women, where are women? Is there something that actually talks to litigation in cases that has got to do with protection of the rights of women? Like we've indicated previously, especially when it comes to maintenance cases, that's what we mentioned, that we don't want to see a woman wanting because they don't know what to do with their situation. It's impossible, and somehow they're faced with a matter, they just got a lawyer, they can afford a lawyer, and it's just simply about maintenance of children. I don't know whether that has actually been looked at. If not, please continue to look into it. It's very important and serious. We want to see really our women and children of South Africa living in an environment or a society that is quite conducive for them. And then in South Africa, there are industries that have got ombudsmen, which actually gives South Africans an impression that there's access to justice because there's an ombudsman. But somehow we've got reports that some of the ombudsmen, or maybe more than half of them, it's not working out because the ombudsmen are actually paid by the same industry. So to be in the position to be objective when you have to actually bite the hand that this hits you becomes impossible. I would like you to develop interest in this area of work, because if there's one thing that has been put in place and it's found to be having limitations, it will be good for us to start reviewing and re-strategizing to see to what extent we can help in matters of that nature when it comes to these industries, because somehow we had thought at some stage that this has been sorted out by just creation of offices of the ombudsman. About Marikana, which my colleague, Honorable Maila, has raised, my suggestion would be for us to actually look at the legal aid South Africa legislation to see to what extent we could actually also deal with this, reviewing our own legislation. Because if we're going to be faced with measures of this nature, it's going to eat up your budget one day. Or you're going to find that you actually work at a very high deficit. So before it happens, we need to start looking at it to see how we can then prevent a big problem coming up. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Not raising this issue of land before the first time. Maybe we need to say that land disposition is the root of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. Now, this triple challenge leads to other problems, like racism, like crime, and so on. Now, our failure as government to address the land question meaningfully, we think is going to cause problems even for yourself, the credibility of the court. But if you look at the situation now, we have a legal regime in place. Everything will go to the Land Claims Court through the Provincial Land Claims Commission. And the Land Claims Court claims that nothing is coming from those commissions. And they also claim that some of the lawyers that go there, they don't take that court seriously. They don't even prepare, but also the lawyers that are there, some of them are not even permanent. And for us, there's nothing that can destroy this democracy faster than the language. And we were grateful because at the last meeting, you indicated that you had some thoughts as to how this can speed it up. I was just checking because I said that we must prioritize that workshop where you could do an input and then we bring other departments that are affected. Because the other challenge that we have is this fund that exists is given to the department, which doesn't have the capacity to administer, and then the department appoints a white firm in Johannesburg, if to be the one that decides who must be on the, what we call it, on the panel. And then you have some black lawyers saying that that white firm is preferring white people. And at the end, you have white judges there, you have white lawyers there, and people start saying that actually decisions are taken in clubs and so on. Now, it creates racial tension where there should not be racial tension. So I want to agree with Honorable Ron that maybe we should engage and say, why don't we get the funds to be transferred to legal aid, because it will also cut the red tape where you go to the land commission goes to another law firm, another law firm appoints other, then you would be able to allocate lawyers and be able to fund this thing. Because, you know, the political environment has changed. There are some political parties that believe that the waste of time to be going to court for land, just invade the land, because once they invade, you can't remove them, you must give them alternative land, and so on. So we can actually destroy this democracy unless we deal with this matter. Because, you see, if we focus on land division, the other question is, who are the people on the land who are being evicted? You find that these are foreigners who are working on the farms because they are not unionized. They can't make demands on the farms. And when you tell the farmers that, look, we have a 50-50 scheme, the farmers say, no, the best thing is to get rid of these people. We have no 50 to give to these people. And there are so many farmers who want to do joint ventures with black people, but government is failing to transfer the land to the people. And those farmers get frustrated. They say, we can't invest in the land when we are not sure about our future. So we are even making it difficult for the farmers that believe that they must join hands with the other South Africans and move forward. So it's a pity that we give our problem to you, but because I think that each time we met and discussed this matter, you had better insights. Maybe we time that we tap into those insights and maybe pursue the proposal by Honorable Ron. The other thing, just President, the President in different forums has said that the Land Restitution Act is loaded in favor of the landowners. These landowners now these days are not only white people. You know, you take Makua's group, people who are supposed to be helping the people to get their land are the ones, some of them even in government, go and buy Makua's group for themselves instead of returning it to the people. So it's no longer a white issue. This is black middle class heading on to the problem. So I think I would suggest, honorable members, that maybe what we should do, we must follow up on the workshop and then ask Judge Mlambo, Judge President Mlambo, to prepare an input and guide that discussion. And secondly, approach the Department of Land Affairs, engage them on this question of the location of the fund, because for as long as the fund is located there, we're not going to make the problem. Honorable.
Yes, the only thing I wanted to raise is the weak point that we have in the government. We're doing a lot of good work, but people don't know about it. For example, there are many people who don't know that legal aid assists in civil matters. I thought that if you are able to even go to the radios, particularly in the rural areas, people don't have papers and so on. If you can go at least once a month to the radio, local radios, and sort of have a slot there and explain what you're doing and how they can be assisted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the valuable pointers. Yes, the land issue is a vexed issue. And I think the last time we spoke about it, we did say that we could contribute to solutions as to how it's done, because one side of the land issue is protecting the tenure of people who find themselves on these farms that are owned elsewhere, burial rights, access rights, and then there's also the other side, which is the land claims part, right? And the evictions part is part of the first part. So I think what we said last time is that we don't have a problem in coming to the party and assisting if we are given that work. And I think I've said the same to the Minister of Justice, who is our regulatory authority. Now, it's a matter beyond our control. We can go and say give that work to us, right? And and I don't want to be understood to be saying we can solve those problems. What I'm saying is we can do our bit to assist in the situation, because I suspect the biggest problem that people may have with us getting involved is that we will introduce tariffs on the legal fees that are charged, right, to make sure that those funds that are there go a long way, right? So people may have a problem with that, but we are on record as saying if we are asked, we will see what we can do, right? And we remain of that position. I've sat in a number of land claim cases in the SCA, so I have a fairly good idea of the challenges faced by people in that area. And I want to assure the committee that whatever initiative is implemented, we will take part. Make sure that we come up with a system that works. That's the first part I want to say on that one. I will try and answer some of the other questions. Let me go to Marikana. We refused to fund Marikana because we held the same view as is expressed here today. But that's one instance. It will eat up funds that could have gone so far. Therefore, and it's unbudgeted, and we didn't think that our mandate extended to representing people who are appearing before commissions. So that's why we challenged those decisions, and we wanted the court to clarify our constitutional obligation as far as commissions are concerned, and the Constitutional Court has clarified that. And the lesson learned is that the executive under whom we fall, whenever they decide to form commissions, they should do what they do when they create new courts. When they create a new court, they know that we will need prosecutors, we will need legal aid, and they look at our budget to make sure that when that court starts working, we are properly resourced to cover those courts. And the Constitutional Court has said that it's not our responsibility out of our own funds to fund people who appear before commission. The executive must create a fund every time they set up commissions. It's a lesson that we've learned, and we hope our executive authority will also do likewise in making sure that we are not found in the situation where we were found, right? The other issue that I wanted to deal with is the case flow issue that was raised. Legal aid is integrally involved in the NEECs and the PEECs. I used to chair the Limpopo one as well as the Gauteng one and the Mpumalanga one. We actually had the Mpumalanga one yesterday. And the role of legal aid as a key stakeholder is very valuable in the sense that they are able to can bring information to say, we're involved in 5 cases that are over 8 years old, right? We've got 5 cases like that in Mpumalanga. And the fault is not legal aid or prosecution, it's the presiding officer. This is a person who was appointed to act. The matter has been postponed 9 times over 3 years. People are in custody over 6 years. Right. So it's Legal Aid South Africa that brings this information to the PEC to make sure that we start tackling the true and wrong players. So I want to assure the committee that we continue to play our role in that regard. And it's not only in that regard. In terms of children in custody, right, Legal Aid has prioritized children as a vulnerable group, a special vulnerable group. So whenever we get an instruction about the children in custody, we first check whether he is in a child facility or whether that child is incarcerated with others. And we make sure that the right thing is done. And then we fast-track their representation, especially diversion programs and all that. So as far as those two committees are concerned, legal aid plays its part. Now, the other issue that I thought I'll respond to, the ELA program, where we had to terminate the services of a service provider, we didn't lose any money. I think the CEO recognized me as chair very early enough to say we may have problems there. And she sought my guidance whether we should pay as agreed or whether we should hold back. And we held back and we called the service provider to say, look, we have problems. Demonstrate to us whether you will be able to fulfill this. They threatened litigation. We said, bring it on, and they withdrew. And we ended up, we gave them a chance, right? And they failed, so we walked out of it. And there's been no litigation, and we didn't lose any money. We didn't pay the money that we're supposed to pay them. And it's not the first time, Chair, that we've done that with a major service provider. We did that with one of the biggest cell phone operators in this country. We terminated that contract. They threatened litigation. We said, bring it on, and they walked away. It's because the information that we keep and the way we prepare our cases is to make sure that we safeguard the money that we have to make sure that it does what it's meant to do. Chair, let me just ask maybe my other team to deal with other issues. I think there are others that I may have to come back to later. Patrick?
In regard to the integrated criminal justice system, I think we must understand these are all IT systems. So the question would be is how do we share the data that each of us have in those different systems? So the systems that we are being designed, and I'm not an IT person, is such that you can share the data and that then it can be utilized by the different sections. Same thing would be ultimately when you start doing the dockets that are e-dockets, how do we share that information and integrate it? So we are part of that committee in ensuring that whatever each role player does from the IT system, they're able to link. And that's where most of all the IT systems are set up so that that kind of data can be shared and brought across into your systems. And that's what happened in regard to this question of the links to the different SAP stations. They then share their data with us. That then will tell us there's someone that we have now in custody that says they want legal aid and they send us that information. And that then highlights for us that there's someone that needs assistance at an earlier stage than when we're getting to court. So that information can be pre-populated into any of our applications and pulled into our systems, which makes it more efficient because you don't have to capture that data. So that would be how the systems and the different IT systems would integrate via the integrated criminal justice system. If I look at in terms of languages and in terms of litigation, obviously there we don't play the lead role in determining the languages that are used in the courts. There are certain pilot projects that have taken place where the magistrate, the prosecutor, and the defense lawyer can speak one of the 11 official languages, and then we still proceed in English and Afrikaans and have different translators running through. So I think that's still something, a challenge that needs to be looked at as to how we deal with those languages. From a Legal Aid South Africa perspective, obviously, our recruitment is directed towards serving our client base, and therefore the recruitment of our staff is also directed towards that, to ensure that we can assist our clients in the language of their choice. Then I can just go to, maybe I can just deal with marketing and visibility in one aspect from the call center. We find that when we're on television, the numbers increase, and we've looked at a more sustainable way of getting the call center advice number, the advice line number, out. And so we're finalizing now. We are printing and we are putting it on the backs of Lion matchboxes. 70 million is being printed in this month, and then will be distributed obviously to all the distribution points where South Africans can buy matchboxes. So you have 40 strikes of matches, and we have two messages, one's linking to our agreement with the South African National AIDS Council, that if someone's feeling discriminated on the basis of the HIV/AIDS or TB status, they can call the advice line, and then another one which is general. So we've got about 35 million each going into the market, and we will measure the impact of matchboxes as a medium to make the call center number known and Legal Aid South Africa known. So that will be an interesting project from just seeing how we can get that number out. Then in regards to children's rights and specifically maintenance issues, I think what we have to understand is there's about 200,000 new maintenance matters each year in South Africa. Our current civil capacity in terms of what we have is to be able to do about 50,000 cases. So if we're only going to do those maintenance cases and do all maintenance cases, we would find that our current capacity will be utilized in totality. So our current policy is set up, and we have reviewed the policy after engagement with the committee, is where the other party is legally represented, and specifically where the woman and or the custodial parent relating to the children is unrepresented, that we will provide legal representation. We also provide advice. But we've added to the policy that where a woman and the custodial parent, which is mostly women, is not able to, A, get a court order because someone's abusing the system and not being able to be brought before court, or secondly, they've got an order but they can't enforce it, that after a period of time has elapsed, they can also then qualify for legal aid, even if the other person is not legally represented. So we've changed the policy to be able to bring more people in, specifically those that are not getting assistance through the system and their case has been frustrated. So that's just in terms of how we've addressed and looked at the maintenance issue. Thank you, Chair.
Judge President, that we make this recommendation on men is that you have this public interest orientation, and other people just want to make money as fast as possible. But at the end, that is going to be at the expense of the country and the future stability of the country. So we are not buying your eyes. We think that we really are going to engage the relevant department and with the relevant information. And if I had the authority, I'd say don't come back here again. We will phone you to if we need information from you. Unfortunately, we are subject to the rules of Parliament. Because I'm just looking at expense in care. Bring a big, big delegation here. When you know plans and everything is clear, and we really, unless members have something to say, but I think the form. Oh, okay. Over to you.
Thank you, Jay. Just on, especially on finalizing what the chairperson of the Galate board has just indicated. On the area of the ELA contract, I want to add to say that the important issue that arose from the cancellation was ineffective provision of the development of certain, as we have indicated. This decision was made in July last year, having us realize that the stage at which the service provider had arrived, we had satisfied ourselves that they have developed and analyzed the existing system in as far as what its requirements should be. And we were also satisfied that the documentation that they provided us was value for money. And at that very stage, we were satisfied that they were performing well. Post that stage, then we had a problem of them designing the system. And we had to test the system, and having it been failing frequently, that led to us canceling the contract. And as the chairperson has already indicated, there is no loss derived from the cancellation, and that, and there's no claim that arose from the service provider thereafter. The issue around the integrated justice system also come into play in as far as us as a collective within the justice cluster assisting each other. And in this regard, when it comes to the IT system, the integrated justice system as a unit has been funding us for development of our system. We're looking forward still that going forward in terms of developing our new system, since we have already advanced in appointing a new service provider, that they will be also funding us. So that is clarifying on that. On marketing and disability, just to add up on what has already been indicated, let me indicate to say that we have a cycle of advertisement. And the new cycle of advertisement on the television and on the radio, especially on the SABC network, just started with the beginning of this financial year from the 1st of April. Along each, what we're looking forward in terms of benefiting us is popularizing Legal Aid South Africa, as it was said. And of course, the determinants of the length of advertisement will depend on the amount of money which we have. I need to conclude to say that on this aspect also, we continue to collaborate with other government institutions, especially on important national days like Human Rights Day and others, in that we avail our lawyers to avail themselves in terms of clarifying our rules and also indicating and showcasing our work in terms of how we can support citizens where there is a need thereof. Then the last one which I needed to respond on was on the issue around whether we are empowering female professionals in as far as making sure that they are party to what we do as an organization. Let me indicate to say that we had a cycle of employment equity monitoring which ended on the 2014. It was a 5-year period. We had set up targets in as far as making sure that we meet specified targets.
in that for the last period, we had noted that we were lagging behind. But in particular, up to the five-year period ending 2014, our target for African females, for instance, in the overall for the organization was 34%. We have achieved a 32% target, which only gave us a 2% differential, as against a 9% differential in 2009. If we were to go into the details thereof, it depends on the level of which we are looking at. At lower level, we had already exceeded our target set. At semi-skilled employees, we had already exceeded it. At professional level, we had already exceeded our 50% margin. At top level, we were still lagging behind at 19% out of the 34%. So in the overall, while we are having a marginal difference of 2%, relatively to different levels, we still have to work even much more better. So that is the response that I need to provide on that scale. Thank you.
Okay, just the last one on cash reserve. Okay, the cash and cash equivalent that we've accumulated over the years is there to settle liabilities as and when they arise, you know, the creditors. It's there to settle the, including provisions, that would be your new provisions, your judicial, I'm just mentioning the big ones. Firstly, to reduce this liability, we're managing the leave liability that we owe our employees. Because in terms of the GRAP standards, we're required to make sure that as an employee leaves, and we're able to settle them their leave liability. So to reduce the leave liability, we then encourage them to take leave during the period where there isn't any work pressure. Again, with Judicare, sometimes happens that when we settle the actual Judicare payment, it's lower than what we had budgeted in terms of our cost per case at the point of issuing instructions. In addition to this, we're managing our liquidity and current ratios, ensuring that it's always above the norm or the best practice. And this ensures that we're able to pay our liabilities as and when they fall due. And on a quarterly basis, we then also, as part of our risk watch, we then also prepare reports to the audit committee indicating where we are in terms of our target and also the norm. So again, in the interest that we receive is often higher than what we have budgeted, resulting in higher cash and cash equivalents. So in terms of good governance and also the impact on the AG, we are still above the norm and we still be able to settle our liabilities as and when they fall due, so it will not have any impact on our audit status. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, one thing, or maybe two. The linkage with over 800 police stations, I think Honorable Maja asked the question. This is one area where we will never allow a deserving legal aid client go without representation. That one, and it's a constitutionally based injunction. So wherever we get to know someone requires us, even when we don't have a presence, we make sure that we cover that person. So I want to assure you, Honorable, that it's something that we pride ourselves, and probably it's a historical accident in the sense that that's why our civil legal aid increases so slowly, because we over-prioritized criminal representation from a long time ago. But we are doing our bit to make sure that civil legal aid also increases. In terms of marketing and visibility, we've spoken about that, and I'm happy that our efforts are being seen, but I also want to report that I had an engagement with the King of the Venda Nation to see how we can utilize the tribal authority structures and on what days when we can send our people to come and talk to the tribal leadership, because we are aware that when people get retrenched, they lose their jobs in the urban areas, they go back to the rural areas. And they are desperate and vulnerable. They don't have money when they've got legal issues to drive to the urban centers. So that was the engagement, to see what plan can we put, on what dates can we send our people. The tribal leadership can tell us, say they can arrange days in Bizo type, say a lawyer will come on this particular issue on this day and will advise you. I'm happy because that's being embraced. It's going to go a long way. In terms of women, Chair, I know my CEO said I should speak about this. In-house, I'm aware of a number of justice centers that are female-led, black female-led. We don't have the figures, but if the committee wants the report, we can give it to them. But when it comes to judicare, I think maybe that's where the question comes from, to say, are we briefing women? We can also look at the report, but the committee should remember that we work on an accreditation basis. We reported here, I think 2 years ago, that when we stringently applied National Treasury regulations to say we want a tax clearance certificate before we can give you work, our judicare numbers dropped drastically. I don't know what that's a reflection of, but we can provide a report based on our accredited professionals and those who respond, right, to say these are the women and these are the women we've given work. We can do that. Right. So I'm just saying, now the last thing, Chair, that I thought let me talk about today is Legal Aid continues to play its role internationally. The United Nations has come up with a new set of sustainable development goals. These are called the MDGs. And we now have a new SDG on access to justice. On access to justice. It was never there before. And we are integrally involved because it was Legal Aid South Africa that spearheaded the UN resolution on the principles and guidelines on access to legal aid in criminal justice systems. And we are involved in that discussion to make sure that we have the correct indicators nationally that tells what is the country doing and what progress is happening in terms of ensuring that meaningful and real access to justice happens. So we are involved in that process as well. Thank you, Chair. The last one, Chair, maybe you'll like this one. We continue to support the advice offices. I had a number of engagements with them to help them discuss through their issues how they can become institutionalized to make sure that they have the necessary capacity and they are able to attract the necessary funding, right, to be able to do that work at grassroots level. We continue to do that.
That initiative, Judge Breckin. In fact, we have been talking to the Department of Justice to say, you know, we have the Foundation for Women, which they are doing very good work. But access even to the community, to look at this informal settlement, no access roads for the ambulance, no access roads for the police. You can have this advice center inside community empowerment. I think you can, people can access justice. So I say this because I think we need to find ways of supporting the initiatives that we have already embarked on to assist those advice centers. They are amongst the people and they talk the people's language so that can help them. Honorable members, I think you have gotten all that you wanted. And we can release the Vice President and the team and keep up the good work. And as we said before, our door is open. I can tell you that I've been in the Randburg Children's Court representing myself, and you appointed a lawyer for a child that is in my care that I am looking after, and also for the father of that child. And those women lawyers that you appointed don't compromise, and they don't want side talk. They say they put the children first.